This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. As the country continues to struggle to help our military members returning from war, one fledgling program in West Virginia isn't wasting any time tackling the issues vets face. From transitional job training to psychological therapy, members of the Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture program say they're discovering that they can help West Virginia veterans in more ways than they ever anticipated. Ashton Maurer reports.
In the basement of the Agriculture Commissioner's building in Guthrie, West Virginia, seven military veterans sit in beat-up blue and yellow chairs. They share stories, tips, and jokes. The Marines poking fun at the Army vets that couldn't have made it in their ranks. The Navy vet who laughs but never touts her own accomplishments. The rowdy bunch has gathered, as they often do, to not just spend time surrounded by friends, but to talk about an initiative that's growing more quickly than they were ready for.
Have you ever heard the phrase, hit the floor running? Yeah, that was us. We hit the floor sprinting.
Beth Ann Earle is a Navy veteran and a state contractor, helping to run the Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture program. Although the legislation was passed during the 2014 session and went into effect June 6, the group didn't wait until they had legislative approval to get started.
We're so new. I mean, we had all these people and programs to manage without even, we hadn't even had, you know, inked paper to set up policy and stuff first. So it was really hard to have it all happen at one time.
Years earlier, as far back as 2009, James McCormick says he had this idea. McCormick had retired from the Army, suffering from PTSD, multiple gunshot wounds, and a traumatic brain injury. He found comfort in farming. Earl had done the same, planting her own urban farm in Huntington's West End and growing it into the full-scale business it is today. The two, along with other veterans sitting around the table in Guthrie that night, thought, if this is therapeutic for us, why can't it help others? It took time, though, to get the program off the ground. Last year, McCormick says they began securing up legislative support, shaking hands with lawmakers not as lobbyists, but as constituents, asking their representatives to support their program, a program they believe can change the lives of at least some of the 164,000 veterans living in West Virginia. McCormick now heads the Warriors and Veterans to Agriculture program in the state, which averages about 7 to 10 applicants a week.
We started to get overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed by applicants and by interest. Some in row crops, others in livestock, but most of that interest, to McCormick's surprise, was in apiary, beekeeping.
This thing is growing, I think, a lot faster than what anybody realizes. And we really found that out when we had to go out and locate the bees. The bees were very hard to find to be able to, you know, to supply the bees to all of these folks that we had out there that were interested.
McCormick was able to connect with a disabled veteran in the Eastern Panhandle who now builds their beehives and a beekeeper in Wayne County to help supply bees. Each veteran is provided two hives, the necessary tools, and a protective suit, totaling between $500 and $600. The bees themselves, though, the veterans have to invest in. But when the program was legislatively approved, there was no money attached.
It's kind of been a struggle, being that we have, you know, all these participants, all these veterans that are wanting to come on board and to get this training and develop these programs and develop, you know, a future for themselves and to contribute and take care of their family. But there's no money. The funding wasn't there.
The program has teamed up with the Department of Veterans Assistance to qualify for state aid in retraining veterans to get them back into the workforce. They've also received grants locally and through universities and have partnered with the West Virginia Women's Commission for funding as well. In the future, McCormick hopes funding won't be a problem. The group plans to ask lawmakers for financial support, but McCormick also says the program is intended to work on a pay-it-forward basis. This year, they provided around 40 veterans with beehives. Next year, those veterans will help a new group by providing them bees and training, helping to perpetuate the program, but also perpetuate the feeling of family they're trying to promote. But it's not just about family for Earl. It's not just about making a living or a few extra bucks either. The Huntington farmer says farming is her therapy. It's the group's therapy, and they want to spread that message as well.
Reaching into the ground, planting a seed, nurturing it, watching it grow, you know, harvesting it, you know, feeding it to your family. I mean, there's something about the entire evolution that is, it's profound, and it's healing, and it's peaceful. And I think that it helps a lot of us deal with our demons.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Guthrie.
When people hear about the Blue Ridge Center for Chinese Medicine in Floyd County, Virginia, they sometimes look surprised and ask, what's that doing here? As Robbie Harris from WVTF Public Radio tells us in part two of her report, not only is it serving a local clientele, it's also working to create a network of farmers raising certified traditional Chinese herbs to supply a growing sector in healthcare.
This past March, the Cleveland Clinic opened one of the first hospital-based Chinese herbal therapy clinics in the U.S. to offer patients what it calls a holistic approach to prevention and treatment of chronic disease. It's difficult to get numbers from government health agencies, but studies suggest this may be one of the fastest-growing sectors in medicine. And that means greater demand for one of its main modalities.
So we have an array of herbs coming up, and most of these herbs have been established for the last 7 or 8 years. And so a lot of these will be able to be harvested and divided this year.
David Grimsley and Nate Sloan are pointing out what look like typical peonies growing in a garden at the Blue Ridge Center for Chinese Medicine. But the pedigree makes all the difference.
As long as you could have the paper trail of where they came from and you know that they're a medicinal plant rather than just a cultivar.
Sloan and David Grimsley are directors of a new project here, the Appalachian Medicinal Herb Growers Consortium. They're working to cultivate a network of local farmers to join them.
There's the native populace, that's the farming populace, and then there's kind of like a transplant audience as well that has been moving in the last 20 years probably, where it's a little more of a open-minded per se in terms of contemporary beliefs, or how would you phrase that?
Yeah, I feel like the people that move to Floyd County are generally well-traveled, so they've seen a lot of things. They've probably lived in a more metropolitan area, and so having Chinese medicine around isn't a new thing to them at all. Yeah.
But if it's one of the fastest-growing areas in medicine, that's partly because the percentage of Americans who use it is still small. To most people, the whole idea of it is foreign. Let's have clinical herbologist Sheila Garangia explain how it works.
So I could have five people come to see me with low back pain. Five people could go to see a Western medicine practitioner for low back pain. And the Western approach is usually like a series of plans, and everybody, regardless, with low back pain will go through that series. So first we try non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and then when those don't work, we try muscle relaxants, and when those don't work, maybe, you know, a cortisone injection or nerve medications like Neurontin or that kind of thing. In Chinese medicine, when we look at the same case, those same five people, although they have the similar issue with low back pain, when we actually look at them more deeply as individual people, we may find that one person has an excessive amount of heat in their system. Another person is excessively cold. Someone else may be very tense in their muscles. Someone else might be very exhausted and weak in their muscles. And the fifth person might have had an injury. In order to arrive at the proper treatment principle, we want to understand that because we want to choose our medicines appropriately for the person, because we may have the same symptom, but we have different people, and we have to treat the person, not the symptom.
Garangia's practice is in Roanoke. She gets her herbs from trusted sources, but there are only about a dozen in the U.S. Most still come from China, and many in this country are concerned about quality control, pollution, and over-harvesting in China, where medicinal herbs have been growing wild for centuries. She says despite the shortage Chinese medicinal herb growers around the country say is coming, she doesn't want to see it become a large-scale operation here.
In the hands of wise herbal medicine practitioners, we don't need to use huge doses or long, long treatments with herbs. When you pick them correctly, they work very efficiently. They nourish the body back into its own balanced state. And then you move on. So that there, you know, it shouldn't be the case where everybody's needing, you know, gallons and gallons of goji berry juice every day kind of thing, straining the environment even further.
Chinese medicinal herbs grow best in undisturbed land, in forests and meadows, such as you see everywhere in Floyd County and throughout Appalachia. She thinks growing these herbs will help not only her patients, but the region as well.
The species of plants require a certain environment, And by catering to them, we will create that environment. And to some extent, that environment can be healthier than the one we're creating right now.
Jean Giblet is a well-respected Chinese herb grower in upstate New York and a consultant to the Appalachian Medicinal Herb Growers Consortium at the Blue Ridge Center.
The other benefit throughout Appalachia and actually the Northeast is that we were never damaged by industrial agriculture to the extent that the Midwest and the far west have been. So we have many unused old traditional farms that are maybe in hay or pasture, and those can be restored and configured so we could grow herbs on them.
So far, David Grimsley and Nate Sloan have gotten only one local farmer to sign on to grow certified Chinese medicinal herbs, but they say they've got a lot of interest from others around here. A similar project is underway in North Carolina. Meantime, they're like a version of the cooperative extension, going out to area farms offering help if people want to consider joining. No easy feat, because it's not possible to tell what the market is. Insurance does not cover Chinese traditional medicine, so it's hard to track.
And you have to create your reality, you know, and that's sort of the secret in life, and I'm trying to teach my five-year-old that right now, is you create your reality, and what you put in, you will get back from the universe. And I feel like I've done that, and that's sort of why I'm here.
Grimsley and Sloan will reap their first harvest this fall. They'll collect the seeds and split the perennials to add three more gardens next year, growing Chinese medicinal herbs and what they hope becomes a new industry in Appalachia. I'm Robbie Harris.
We have a correction to pass along to you. On Monday morning, West Virginia Public Radio aired a story about the proposal to annex sections of Beckley. In the story, Sheila Bailey, personal line manager at Songer Insurance, was quoted as saying that insurance rates would increase in some parts of the communities to be annexed. That is not the case. Ms. Bailey told our reporter that fire insurance rates should actually go down for homeowners involved in the annexation proposal. With annexation, residents will have service from a full-time fire department. Neighborhoods currently without reasonable access to fire hydrants can have higher rates, but the city has the funds to install hydrants in those areas should they be annexed. West Virginia Public Radio was incorrect in the assertion that fire insurance rates would increase. We regret the error. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:46. Some fog this morning, becoming partly cloudy today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 80s, rain and thunderstorms tonight and into tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the New River Gorge Regional Development Authority, working to diversify the economy in the New River Gorge region of West Virginia, serving Fayette, Nicholas, Raleigh, and Summers counties. NRGRDA.org.
This week, folks in Wheeling are ramping up for the annual Upper Ohio Valley Italian Heritage Festival. It's one of the largest Italian festivals in the country. But as Glynis Board reports, it's not all cannoli and spaghetti. Organizers had worked to make ethnicities from across the region feel welcome in their celebration of heritage.
About 30 years ago, some folks from Wheeling went to West Virginia's first Italian Heritage Festival in Clarksburg, which still occurs every Labor Day weekend, and decided they needed to start an Italian festival in the Northern Panhandle too.
They were jealous. They saw and heard wonderful things and wonderful smells, and they saw people in celebrating the heritage and culture of Italy, and they wanted to come back and do the same.
That's Bob Gaudio, who served on the festival's board of directors for 12 years and was the festival chairman for six of those years. He's also the festival's honoree this year, the Ohio Valley's Italian American of the Year.
Coal mines were the reason that my grandfather and many folks who live in the Upper Ohio Valley's grandfathers and great-grandfathers came to the Upper Ohio Valley. They came from Italy, which was at that time very impoverished, in the first part, the late latter part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century. And they came to work and to become a part of this nation because it was prospering. And that's why you have so many Italians up and down both sides of the river.
But Gaudio says Wheeling's Italian festival isn't just about Italian heritage.
So the celebration specifically, or the mission, is to celebrate the heritage and culture of our ancestors. But in doing so, we also celebrate the community of the Upper Ohio Valley, no matter what their ethnic backgrounds. It's the biggest and best neighborhood block party that I've ever attended.
Gaudio explains there's one area of the festival dubbed Little Italy, where there's an abundance of Italian foods. But the rest of the party is full of Greek and classic American foods and drink, 100 vendors, and three stages featuring musical acts from around the region and the country.
Really looking forward to the guitar contest on Saturday afternoon. CA House is sponsoring it on the Williams stage. And I'm looking forward to that. That's new. We've never done it before.
That's Kim Smith, the festival's coordinator for this and the past 10 years.
There's always something different. There's always something new. You know, if you leave hungry, it's pretty much your own fault.
While the food and events and fireworks are the main reasons the festival has become one of the largest of its kind in the country, pulling some 150,000 people each year, Gaudio says the real focus of the festival is the scholarships they hand out to community students.
We have awarded over the course of the 32 years almost $300,000 to area college students, people that were entering college the next semester this coming fall.
High school students apply over the course of their senior year for the $1,000 individual grants that are meant for college books and tuition wherever their studies take them.
You don't have to be an Italian or of Italian heritage to win. In fact, we've had African Americans, Asian Americans, Anglos, everybody wins if you fit the criteria and you're a kid that's done something for your community, you've gotten good grades, and you have the financial need.
There are special categories, but 14 scholarships in all are handed out each year.
It's really why this festival is, why it exists, because we're basically Italian Americans who believe in family and our God and our country, and families first.
The 32nd Wheeling Italian Heritage Festival kicks off Friday evening at the Wheeling Heritage Port along the Ohio River and continues until Sunday evening. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.